Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
So, hey, everybody, welcome to Radio Labyrinth Presents. I'm your host, Steph, and I got my co-host, Jeff LaBoff. And tonight, we're so jacked to the max to welcome one of, and this is a huge spoiler alert, so if you haven't watched season two of Black Summer, one of the only survivors from this season, and in fact, some would say the most baddest ass survivor, Mr. Jesse Lipscomb.
Well, what's going on? Thanks for having me. Yeah, I mean, some might say that. Who, you can say what you want to say, but excited to be alive in real life and on the screen.
Yeah, well, I mean, we know, like, you do everything, though. You've been acting forever. You're a producer. You name it. You do it all. But, I mean, are you getting noticed a lot more than you were?
I mean, you know, this thing just came out. So yeah, there's a lot of attention for sure. It's interesting, right? As an actor, sometimes we do such awesome stuff. We think it's amazing stuff, but not everybody sees it, right? You know that? So, and there's so many different platforms and streaming platforms for things to happen. So it is, I feel really lucky to be able to jump on board with a show that already had a ton of momentum. I was a giant Black Summer fan before I even auditioned. Oh, and then, and so season one, that's actually not 100% true. I did audition for season one. I auditioned for Spears' role. And it was like real close. There's only a few of us at the end. And then when I didn't get it, and this happens, I imagine a lot of other actors feel the same way. If you don't get a role where you were close, you just hate the show. I don't want to watch it. I'm like, it's garbage. What you do first is you check who got it. And you're like, I'm way better than that. But I watched it and I'm like, Justin is great as Spears. I think I would have made the same choice. And then I started watching it, not ever thinking about me being a part of it, but being a giant fan of the show. And I loved it. I was like, I forgot that I auditioned, and B, I became a Black Summer fan. And then I got the audition for the role that I ended up landing.
It's definitely probably the hottest / coldest show on Netflix right now. Maybe Kevin Hart has but
I mean, Kevin Hart is doing okay, you know, and I can't speak ill of Kevin at all. I worked with Kevin on a small little show called What the Fit a couple of years ago in LA, which was super fun. Him and DJ Khaled, which is really cool. He's a great dude and one of the hardest working people ever. I mean, if I'm emulating anyone's work ethic, it's Kevin's and Will Smith, without a doubt. That's the kind of work ethic I want, kind of team around me I'd love. So yeah, good work, fatherhood, but you know, move over, man. It's a Black Summer.
Was season two, was it shot during COVID or did they shoot before the pandemic?
Yeah, man, that is a story, right? So we started February, so pre-pandemic. And you know, we went to shoot, I took a little break, I finished one scene, and then I came back, and there's always a little break before you go back again. And then pandemic hit. And there's a thing that a lot of us had never heard of called a forced majeure. And this is basically mean when there's like an act of God or something that can't be foreseen, it's a clause in the contract that basically states everything's on pause. It may never come back. Your contracts that you had basically are null and void. And everybody's like, well, what's happening? So it was, and there, you know, initially it was like 2 weeks, we'll be back, as everybody, right? A month, we'll be back. So we had no idea if we were coming back. But luckily, we were the very first show Netflix put back on. So that in itself was its own kind of interesting pressure to make sure we did it right. And everybody, crew, cast, really took that to heart. Like, to make sure that we can show that we can do shows in this state. So we were back at the end of summer, August-ish, and we were doing this totally different than any other show we've ever done. We had small little cohorts. We had like green sections, red sections. People putting our makeup on were like in full hazmat gear, and we couldn't like leave these pylons. I didn't get to work with so many actors because we just weren't in the same pod, which was kind of special because when we saw the show for the first time, normally I'm on set and I'm watching performances and we're having a great time together and talking about how well it went, but I didn't get to see some of my best friends that I made on the set, what they actually did. And then I got to see it. I saw it with everybody else for the first time. So it was really a different way of shooting, but I think it also added to what we were shooting because it was a pandemic and so too was this show, right? The show was just about not getting infected and making sure you keep yourself safe. And so when we were living that, it was very method across the board, plus whatever you brought to your own character. I have to say, like, I think it was really a special opportunity to shoot during COVID and be able to A, show the world that we can do that, but also just for what it did for our characters and allowing us to just live in it at all times.
Did you come up with any backstory, or did the writers or producers give you any backstory for your character?
This is one of the most unique film experiences I've ever been a part of. So John Hyams, he initially, once we got the role, reached out to most of the main players just to talk about what his process is. And you know, he's written scripts, and I'll call them more skeletons, really. And the names of all of the characters, you know, on purpose, he would name, my character originally was named Huge Dude. And for example, Sun's character in season one was named Refugee. So all of our characters never had names because he didn't want to put his own bias into who this character might be. Let's just see who auditions for it and gets it. And so what he also said is, you know, we're our own character leads. Like, it's our department. We can bring as much or as little as we want to the character, and what we bring will influence kind of what happens. He had not written the last two episodes when we started shooting, and so there was room for things to grow. So my character was originally written, I believe, is more like a redneck white dude, tall and skinny, is what he had told me. That's how it was written originally. And so then when I got the role, you know, I had created my own backstory. Some of the backstory, whether or not that comes out in a season that comes, we don't know yet, and we'll talk about that. I know what mine is, but it might change with our discussions. But I got to name our own characters, and that was one of the most special pieces for me, because I named my character Mance for a very specific reason, and this dates back many years. So as a Black Canadian African American, someone who, as a result of being enslaved and a transatlantic slave trade and having most of your history erased and not knowing where you come from, I've always been on this like mission to discover like where were my people from, and maybe even finding out what my original last name might have been. I found out my last name Lipscomb came from Ned and Ted Lipscomb in Sussex, Germany. They owned two slave plantations, one in the Carolinas and one in Texas. Then I kept digging, and then I found this blues singer named Mance Lipscomb. And I started listening to his music, and I'm like, there's for sure, there must be some kind of connection. And when I learned why his name is Mance, he changed his name to Mance after Emancipation Proclamation. Oh. And so he took Mance, and that's who he is, Mance Lipscomb. And when I found that out, I said, one day I will either put a character in a show that I've written or play a character that's Mance, because I really love this and I want. So I heard this quote, a person dies twice. The time they take their very last breath and the last time someone says their name. And so when I heard that, I'm like, I want to make sure that Mance's name gets said again. And then I had written him into a couple of scripts, but then I got this role and had an opportunity to put Mance in a show. And so Mance's backstory is very similar to the character Mance's backstory. Everything about him was that idea of just trying to survive in a world that doesn't trust you, that doesn't love you, but all you have is your word. All you have is yourself, and you take care of people the way you would normally, but you're just trying to survive in a place that doesn't want you there. And so that's what I took into it and why I called him Mance.
It really seemed like this was the only time when race finally was gone. It was just everybody, it was all against the zombies. I mean, it seems like right. It would be sad if that's what it took for everybody to just not think about that, you know?
That's interesting that you say that, because for me and my character, that wasn't the case at all. You know, I think you carry in your unconscious bias even into the most horrible places. And I even think as characters and actors, we can't ever escape that. Like my character definitely assumed that other white characters saw him the same way that they had seen him when there wasn't a pandemic, as a threat. And even as I look through comment threads and things where they talk about like, there's only one good character, right? And oftentimes it's Sun and Sun and Sun. But I know my character did everything that he could in a good way, but like those biases exist all the time. And so my character also understood this, and so very reserved. And I was very, you show me your cards before I show you anything. So for me and for Mance, race definitely plays an issue still, you know, and just because we're 4 months out of the beginning of this apocalypse, we haven't forgotten who we are. Some people might have, and you can see some people are starting to, but Mance had not. I think he still really remembers who people are and how they have treated him in the past and probably will in moving forward.
Mance, like he popped up here and there and you would never know because, you know, there's people on there that are on there all the time. It doesn't matter. I mean, poor Lance at the beginning. You're like, oh, Lance, man. I mean,
but also, like, if you're going to go, that is the most epic way to go. Everybody's like, what happened to Lance when he ran into the stadium? First episode, he's back. You killed him, though. What? But like also, no one's going to forget how many deaths have happened in that show and you don't know who they are. You'll never forget Lance's death. I get you, but also a way to be like immortalized.
Well, and that's the thing is like, I feel like you're going to be not just from this series, but people who are zombie horror fans, whatever, you're going to be remembered epically for having probably one of the most intense just gauntlet of zombies that you fought through. I can't tell you, my husband and I, we were white knuckling the couch. We're like, at any minute, you're gonna go. And we just wanted, I mean, and everybody's wondering like, what kind of training did you go through to do that kind of scene? Cause it wasn't and like you were like some born identity. You were like a regular person who was just grabbing shit, slapping them with crap. I mean, just whatever you had to do, you made it happen.
And how many times did you have to do that? Because it looked exhausting.
So first, Jeff, yes, exhausting, absolutely. Very tired, very sore every time that we had to do that. I mean, it was about 2.5 days, that one specific fight scene. But on the flip side, it actually went the reverse way. This is fun because there's so many stories here that just nobody knows about. So my character, huge dude, on the script was originally supposed to die in episode 6, when the crate fell. It was supposed to be 3 of us who died. So that was what was in the original script. So that was it. I was in the show and I know that's happening. My very first day on set was actually episode 1, where Mance shows up and he's hitting some people who are turning with the bat. And so I remember I walked out on the set and John was like, hey, Jess, let's get you in this scene. This is where I thought, this is the difference. You know, when you have your own reality and then there's the reality. So I thought what I had done here was what made John decide to keep me in the show. So I was there and I'm like, hey, John, like, look around. Like you first intro Mance, and the first thing he does is smash a white woman in the head. And then minutes later, he does it again to another white woman. And I know they're turning and they're crossing. And I know originally you didn't intend Mance to be black, but there's some stereotypes out there that you are enforcing right now. And I think if you don't give Mance some redeeming qualities, this could be bad. How about we keep the black in Black Summer? I said that, I'm like, smooth, Lipscomb, that's gonna work, right? But find out later on, him and I are chatting. That had nothing to do with it. What actually happened was, I believe it might be episode 6, the episode where we're around the house. And so what happened is, the big team went one way and I decided to go another way and I just jumped over the fence. So the fact that I just jumped over the fence with ease. So my backstory is I used to be a professional high jumper. I was number 6 in the world as a high jumper. So ex-professional athlete. So like that little leap was literally nothing for me, but apparently in the tent, they were like, oh, he could jump over stuff. Look how athletic he is. Let's keep him alive and write this super battle sequence for him. That was what it was. It had nothing to do with me trying to be like an activist and try to do the right thing. He's like, he can jump. Let's keep him alive. So, the reason they wrote that thing is based on some previous pieces of me being in really good shape and that I can do this kind of stuff already. So for me, all of that was me being athletic. I stay in good shape. I stay in good shape because you never know what role. It's much easier to get out of shape than get into shape. So if ever I have a role where I need to be like frumpy dumpy, I'll do that with ease. But right now, I stay in shape because I'm 6'3", 250 pounds. Most of the stuff that's going to happen will probably have some physicalities. And then I got to do one of the most epic fight scenes ever. It was so fun.
You got to stay Black Summer skinny. You just have to.
That's right. You got to get Black Summer ready. It's a whole new thing.
So that crate was never going to make it up the hill, because I was worried that you were going to get the crate up there and then that guy was going to kill you and take everything in the crate.
Yeah. I really do like how, because I mean, that idea of that character, he was supposed to give that, like, is he going to break? And like, I love that intensity. And even when we're shooting, this is the brilliance of editing and John, like when we're doing it, you don't see the entire bird's eye view of what they have in their mind. So you just trust in your director and you do that work. And I love seeing how it came together, because I was even tense. I'm like, man, he's a problem. And then I'm like, do they think I'm a part of the problem too, to the girls? You know, like for Jason, Natalie, I'm like, that's not me, but I think you think it's me. Like all of that stuff. When I watched it for the first time, I was having those same feelings as well about it. I'm like, I promise I'm a good guy. Don't just loop me in with the dudes. But yeah, it was interesting, because I mean, they let go of the rope and I was not cutting it because I wanted to get rid of them. I was cutting it because I didn't want to die. That was all that was, you know? And then you see them run away and find out that might've been on purpose. So that was a cool scene.
You know, you conveyed that with just a look. Whenever you looked up at them and you looked at the thing, it was like, you had no choice.
Right, good.
You had to do it. It was that or you were going to die.
I'm glad that came through, because I wasn't trying to kill people. I was just trying not to die.
No, I think it said from the start, like you were definitely just a regular, you seem like a regular person, not trying to get over on people. You're just trying to find stuff to live or whatever. But saw recently Justin Chukeri. He was talking about how cold it was shooting in Calgary. Yeah. And I wondered if, you know, you being a native Canadian, do you think the West Coasters are just babies, or was it really that cold?
Justin, hear me out. Oh, pumpkin, were you cold? Oh, geez. Let me tell you what, that was beautiful Alberta winter. It was fluffy snowflakes. Nobody was frostbitten. You can't spend 14 hours outside in a regular winter in Alberta. And he's like, it's a little chilly. It was fine. It was gorgeous. You couldn't have asked for better weather. They called up like the most perfect like weather you could have. Giant snowflakes, nothing fake. It was fine. I would take that any day. A couple days were cold, sure, but I was very happy with it. And he just needed a warm hug.
He was like, this is where they shot The Revenant. Which I know it is, but
it's true. It's true. But also, let's talk about how beautiful it is, though, right?
Gorgeous.
Like I love that juxtaposition of how dire the scenario is, but how beautiful the landscape is and how much of it happened in the day. So you really get to see, you'd be like in awe of the mountains and the big drone shots and landscapes, but yet like you might die in any second. I thought I enjoyed that a lot as well. You don't get to see your own backyard that way often, right? It was really special. Yeah.
So have they approached you about coming back for season three? Are there talks? Are they looking at when they might start shooting again?
I mean, these are questions I'm not really allowed to talk about. Right. Jeff, you know that. But I mean, I'm alive at the end of the season. You could probably guess some stuff, but yeah, you know, nothing official that has been released, so I can say nothing official. But I know that if we do come back, I feel confident that Mance will probably exist.
At least for a while, anyway. Hopefully.
No, maybe they lance me, but they've already done that trick. They're not a one.
Right.
I'll at least get to episode two, I feel like, you know.
I mean,
they got to be coming back. Simon Pegg is heaping tons of praise on the show, on his Instagram and stuff.
Yeah, I saw that. That was pretty cool.
I mean, I think Boone and Lance were probably the least deserving of getting Black Summered.
Yeah. That's a new verb. I like it.
What character do you think definitely had it coming?
Oh, geez. What character did I think definitely had it coming? You know, I would say that, you know, my one of my best friends who was in the show, Andrew Measley, And he played one of the leaders. So when you saw Ray and that other group come and he had the half pumpkin hat on, his character was just shit. He was, and he is one of the most peaceful, loving human beings in the world. Very, very Zen and yoga, but his character was an ass. So he had it coming, and I'm fine with that as a character. Not as a friend, because I would have loved to do more, but who he played needed to go, for sure. So that's, I'm okay with that. Boone, no, man. Boone had some, he had some mental health issues, for sure. His backstory as well, but just a loving person who wanted to help people everywhere, and people took advantage, especially in that time. That's people take advantage of it. I really think Black Summer did that, of really putting a magnifying glass on kind of who we are as people. And as much as we don't like it, it kind of is real of how we act in certain scenarios. And I love that that was a thing. A lot of people love or hate it, but it felt very real.
I loved it. And Rose, yeah. Oh God, I don't know if anything's as cold as Rose at times. And when she was going to shoot him, I'm like, you piece of crap. When she left Spears, I was like, you garbage ball. You wouldn't even have had your daughter had he not gotten you there.
I know.
But then when they came back together at the lodge and the whole talk, I mean, this show had it all. I mean, you're terrified, you're crying. I mean, it's...
Like, in the same thing, when you said who had it coming, the first thing in my mind was Rose, even though she's alive. I don't like not liking Rose, but I don't like Rose.
No,
like,
she's horrible.
Manson and Rose are not friends. We might strategically work together, but if I'm Mance and I don't know Rose's backstory, like, I don't, we'll work together for sure. But, like, knowing it, I don't like her, but I understand. Like, she's lived a life in a patriarchal world where she's got, like, men have taken advantage in many different ways, whether it's professional or whether it's trying to survive in a zombie apocalypse, and she has a daughter. So I get where that comes from. And unfortunately, it's not going to make a ton of friends, but you're not making friends in Black Summer. You're trying to make another life, another day, wake up tomorrow. So I get her. I don't have to like her. And even not liking her, I don't even have to like her for us to win together. But that's another thing I think that's real life. We don't have to like each other to do great things together. And if anything, there's a takeaway there. I can hate you, but we can still do great things together, and we don't have to be best friends, right? We can put things aside and say, what's the end goal? And I hope that a lot of that kind of stuff happens, but, like, where can we collectively reach a goal that is, in a utilitarian way, the best for who's here? We don't have to be best friends. Maybe some things happen along the way, but at the end of the day, it's goal oriented. And I like that opportunity is available for a lot of the characters. Well, a lot, four of us, five of
right.
us.
Right. I mean, if you had to guess, if everybody lived, if you were producing the story, or how would you like to see season three start?
I like that. If I were doing this, season three would be a backstory. 100%. It would be it'd be a month before it started. And so that are some of our favorites who died, people were mad at, we actually get to see them again and who they actually were. Maybe people we loved, we find out we hate because they were shit, and vice versa. So, like, there's so much opportunity for, like, man, I judged a book by its cover and I was wrong, or vice versa. But we get to see some of the people that have already had, like, an investment of fans and all of that. And we get to see what happened, which also gives a guarantee season four. Right. Then now we can jump back to the present. So if it was me, that would be what I would love to do. If I was writing it, I would love to see that, bring back some of the fan favorites. You have analytics as a fan base to see who people loved. So it's kind of like a win-win in my mind. But, I'm not writing it and Netflix has never asked me to. But if that happened, that's what I would do.
I love that idea. And the direction of the show is built for that. It would be perfect.
Everyone's hungry to find out who they are, right? Everyone.
I would
wants
love to
know,
see William
right?
Velez again. I mean, that was one of the most heart-wrenching when she shot him in season one. I was like, no.
I know. Velez was such a cool character. It was. Yeah. And Barbara, too.
Oh, Barbara.
Like, what was Barbara doing beforehand? Before, like, all of that stuff. Like, who were we before, like, the sirens went off? We knew anything. Were we knitting? Was I, like, what was our thing? Or was I doing something so, like, criminal? In season one, this is one of my favorites. You remember when they opened the door and there were that very weird scene was happening with the people that were tied up, and then they closed the door and left. and we never even touched on it, right? Like there are probably characters that we've grown to love that have some like insidious things that are like, oh, I would never talk to them, but we're like, that's my favorite character, because the apocalypse became a reset for everyone to just redefine however they want to define themselves. And some people chose to be other people. And I would love to know those choices from each of these characters and what they did and who they were. That would be special.
I'd definitely love to see some Mance backstory and just find out.
I can promise you that doing. If they don't do it, I'll do it myself. It's fine. It'll be a short little 10-minute short. You're going to get all of it. And I don't have to answer anybody, because I created Mance before Black Summer even existed. So I will tell you Mance's backstory if I don't get a chance to do it in this show.
He's definitely the breakout star of this season for sure.
I appreciate it, Jeff. Thank you.
You got to have tons of offers and stuff coming in now with all that going on. And are you working on anything currently?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't work that fast, or maybe it does for some other folks. But, you know, I am working on some projects right now. I just finished a feature yesterday, and then I'm headed out to Calgary to shoot another pretty decent. It's a pretty big series. You know, I'm not allowed to talk about what it is yet. We have our NDAs, but I definitely will mention it. I'll let you guys know when we're allowed to talk about it. But yeah, very cool show that's happening as well right now, shooting in Calgary. And then, you know, I'm trying to keep my like winter/fall open for the hope. But at the end of the day, you got to work. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, you know, I'm staying busy. None of the stuff I'm doing right now is ripples from Black Summer, but that'll come shortly, I imagine.
Yeah, the scripts are probably FedExed to your house back home right now.
Well, if not, man, just remind them. Just tell them. Send them to Lipscomb. You just wait them.
Before we wrap up here, can you tell us a little bit about your campaign, Make It Awkward?
Make It Awkward is a campaign and a movement essentially to create everyday activists, one awkward conversation at a time. And so much of what's present right now, whether that's, you know, anti-Muslim hate, anti-Asian hate, anti-Black, anti-Indigenous, all of this stuff starts with the conversations like you and I are having right now. It's the conversations that happen when nobody's around. And the fact that many people don't call each other out on the damaging language, the damaging words. And as you make it okay to do one thing, it becomes more and more okay to do worse things. The movement itself is to just give people tools and courage to be able to call things like that out, have the information, the knowledge, the history to say that's wrong, and here's why it's wrong, here's why it's damaging. And when that happens within your close-knit circles, I feel like it's accepted differently than just like watching a YouTube video, like your loved one, or not even loved one. You and us three have a rapport right now. And if someone said something off kilter right now and I called you out on it, I feel like it would land. And it's often awkward to do that, right? But I want people to have a little bit more confidence and tools to be able to do so. And so that's what the movement's been. It actually started in 2016. I was shooting a commercial in my city about how wonderful my city was. And a car drove by that I didn't know and started screaming racial slurs out at me. And I walked up to them and had that conversation of, why did you think that was okay? And that kind of started the entire thing. And then now we've switched it. You know, we just finished creating a game called Not That Funny. And it plays like Cards Against Humanity. But instead of that, we have situations that are very racist or sexist or homophobic. And then we have response cards that you play. And some of them are hilarious and some of them are not that funny. And the not that funny ones might be like, all lives matter. And so if that card's selected, there's a chance for bonus points if you can describe why all lives matter is a harmful or damaging statement. So it's like a gamification of activism that we created. We did a Kickstarter and it got funded. And so now we're in the shipping spots of it. But anyone who's interested, notthatfunny.store, you can check it out and learn some things. And the whole idea really is just trying to create a more even keel playing field. And, you know, it's like that dreamland. Can we all just get along? Yes, we can, but not until so many people do the work, predominantly white people, understand what has to happen, and BIPOC individuals on how we can, you know, get through the generational trauma and aid in the support and healing of each other.
When I watched the video, and when you hear him say that stuff to you, and you're like, what year is this? What is happening? And then I think as Americans, I grew up in downriver Detroit, and we would always drive over to Canada when we turned 19 to drink over to Windsor.
Right.
That was like the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you know, you go to Canada and you're like, everybody's nice here. It's clean. We don't think of that kind of crap happening there. I don't know. We just don't. I mean, here, of course, obviously, but not there. Until I listened to a podcast a couple of years ago on Thunder Bay, and how yes. they just like all these indigenous people just get pitched in the river there. And I was completely blown away by that. So
yeah, it's often, you know, many people think that for whatever reason that 49th parallel changes something. Like you're like, racist, not racist. Not racist. That's not how it goes, right? As it turns out, it just kind of just bleeds in, and that's a reality, you know. And there is, even within Canadians themselves, you know, a lot of people have taken the idea that we're not as bad, and being not as bad means you don't have to do anything. A lot of that's changing more and more recently, specifically with, you know, the discovery of all of the remains and bodies of children in Kamloops and Saskatchewan and all over the place from the residential schools that have happened here. And there's a lot of real truths that are coming out where Canadians can no longer pretend that's not the case. And as gross and disgusting as that is, it's also a necessary step to finding out what the truth is before you can start to reconcile what needs to happen. You know, and some of that's happened in the States, not so much when we're talking about teaching about what the, you know, the slave trade actually was and that the America's built on. But all of this happens from conversations. And that's why I say creating activists one awkward conversation at a time. Even this conversation, and anyone who's listening, whether they disagree or agree and has that conversation, they're having a conversation about it. And the more that that's on the table, the quicker we get to, I think, where we all want to be. So that's the hope with Make It Awkward, is just keep those conversations moving, you know, and the same way as like keeping telling stories of marginalized individuals and having more Black women directors and writers and Indigenous women directors with disabilities. Like the stories are endless, and we've been so focused on just one or two different lenses, and such a great opportunity to tell more stories that a lot of people will resonate with. So I bring it with me everywhere I go. I can't stop being a Black guy anyway. But I mean, and I've said this many times before, Black guy, because that's the label, but I went to Home Depot. You have Home Depot in the States?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So at Home Depot, I went there and I went to the Benjamin Moore paint section. And as it turns out, in the summer, so right now, I'm antique walnut. And in the winter, I'm toasted bagel. So like, I'm a Black guy, but at the end of the day, I'm no monolith. And that's who I am. Long as we can all just, you know, find a way to find this common ground, which might mean giving up a little or offering a little more to somebody else. But we'll get there. I got hope.
It seems like it's getting there, but needs to go a lot faster, in my opinion.
That's right. I'm riding your coattails, Jeff. Lead the way.
I've long since said, if everybody, if you are the minority, I know that when I went to school, I was the minority for several years, and it's humbling. And I feel like everybody should have to be the minority at some point in their lives, and you would understand what it's like.
Where did you go to school?
To E-Course. It's a downriver Detroit. It's like about 10 minutes outside, and very much the minority there. And
was it majority Black?
I got picked on quite a bit, and it is one of those things. And all it did was to teach me that it sucked. And I never ever wanted to treat somebody like that.
I think it's so important just that idea of once you feel it, even though it's not the same game, right? Like being a minority in the school, still a quote unquote majority in the country you live in. So there's like a safe haven, but even feeling a piece of it allows that empathy, right? And this is the whole thing. Change moves at the speed of empathy. The more we can find ways for people to actually feel that thing, then it becomes about them, which it ultimately and has always been. But like sometimes those lessons need to occur. And then someone like yourself can speak to it, right? And you can speak to it differently than I can, because if you're speaking to a room of white women off the jump, there's already a rapport that I don't have. But you have an experience that you can relate that really affects the people that don't look like you, other marginalized people. So I fully agree. Any opportunity to put yourself in a place where you're not comfortable, a place where it is new and it is awkward, will only benefit you, but also benefit the communities you live in. So I'm with you on that.
Well, if you ever want to come back and plug anything, any projects you have going on, feel free to let us know and we'll jump on with you. And if you want to point everybody to your social media, if you want some Twitter followers or Instagram.
Yeah, well, if you want to know any more of the nonsense that comes out of my mouth, at the Lipscomb on all the social media places. So at the Lipscomb, and you can Google it to spell it properly, but it's lips on your face, a comey hair with an E on the end. Super simple.
Well, we're so grateful, like beyond grateful, to have you on. Such a cool dude. So just glad you lived. Glad your character made it.
Me too.
Definitely deserved it.
Yeah, and anybody that went through that gauntlet has to survive for at least two or three more seasons.
At least, right? I feel like it's an unwritten rule. You have to. That was, and it was a bigger gauntlet than Lance's gauntlet. So no matter what, I get a little bit more than Lance. That's what I feel like. If we're gonna do that, I get more than Lance did. Lance ran from one zombie. One. I took care of like 10 of them without a gun. I get at least six episodes minimum. I really appreciate your guys' love and support for the show.
Thanks for taking time out for us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye, Jesse.
All right. See you guys.
To modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.